Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Jackie Hendry, in today for Lori Walsh. It probably goes without saying that rural electrification programs in the mid-20th century made an impact on rural life in South Dakota. I mean, think about it. We went from oil lamps to light bulbs, and farmers had access to all kinds of tools to make for a different way of doing day-to-day tasks. Gwen McCausland is with the South Dakota Ag Heritage Museum in Brookings, and she joins us today with more from the Janine Basinger Studio on the South Dakota State University campus. Gwen, thanks for joining us today on In the Moment.
Thank you.
To start, Gwen, I'm hoping if you can give us a quick overview of the Power to the People exhibit at the Ag Heritage Museum. What can visitors expect to see?
Well, we just opened Power to the People, Electrifying Rural South Dakota, and this exhibit really talks about how energy came to the farm. It not only talks about Rural Electrification Act of 1936 and how we connected farms to the grid, but also it talks about wind energy and how 32-volt appliances were in workings in the farm when they weren't having access to electrification right away. We also talk about how did it really impact agriculture, specifically dairies and hatcheries, and then how did the farm home actually change with electrification and with appliances and labor-saving equipment such as that.
Right. So some more urban communities in South Dakota had electricity as early as, 1880s or so. But tell us a little bit about at what point did the push for rural access to electricity really begin in earnest?
Well, a lot of urban communities such as Aberdeen, Brookings, and Sioux Falls had municipalities that generated electricity in the late 1800s. Some of the experiments, the Renner line, which was General Motors and other General Electric were trying to experiment to see if they could bring the lines out to surrounding communities out in the farms and rural areas. But they found that it just wasn't lucrative enough. It couldn't be sustainable financially. And so it was about how to get electricity out to the farms. And it was really a push during the New Deal under the Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal of the 1930s, where he signed the Rural Electrification Act, forming the Rural Electrification Administration. And basically what that did was provide funding for cooperatives to give capital through loans to establish utility cooperatives that installed power lines from the existing grid structure to the farm.
Right. What were some of the biggest challenges? And I mean, of course, you have the remote nature of these rural farms, but what were some of the challenges to implementing once the Rural Electrification Act is signed to bringing that access to these rural areas?
Well, most people don't realize that South Dakota, majority of it didn't really become electrified in the rural communities until past the World War II, so in the 1950s. And in some communities and some farms didn't even get electricity until the 1960s. Majority of South Dakota and the farms and ranches gained electricity from 1935 to 1955, but progress was slow due to the vast distances between farms. And of course, World War II stalled the progress in the early 1940s. And so there was a real push by 1945 and 1946 to get electrification cooperatives across the state. But in the meantime, a lot of the farmers were relying on wind generators and gas generators to produce electricity because they did want to use the labor-saving equipment that was available at the time.
Right. And tell us, I wonder, if you can, about some of those new equipment, because we mentioned how electricity was especially useful for dairies and hatcheries. What did some of those developments look like? How big of a benefit was this for farmers?
Well, in the 1920s, they started having an exodus away from the farm, and so there were fewer and fewer laborers available. But when it came to dairies, from milking from hand or then to having surge milkers, but you also, the biggest thing was refrigeration. So you were able to, instead of having your milk or your cream being stored for the week in a cistern or in a water trough, that was then taken to the creamery at the end of the week, you had bulk cooling tanks. And so it provided refrigeration to keep your milk fresher longer. And you also then started getting ventilation, which was really important for the health of the livestock, but also the farmers in the dairy, in the barns, in the parlors. But that was also true for other livestock as well as poultry. In the poultry area, the biggest thing was light bulbs, because chickens naturally will only lay during certain periods of light. And that was a natural instinct to preserve their young. So you wouldn't lay eggs in the wintertime so that your chicks wouldn't hatch when it was they could potentially die. So with having heaters and electric light, the chickens were able to then lay year-round or for a majority of the longer because it basically has the chickens believing that there is more sunlight. And so that increased egg production quite a bit. Mm-hmm. But ventilation, heating, and electricity, really just having also the safety of having electric lights, having the yard light across the barn instead of having a gas or a kerosene lamp in the barn. Also, you had sanitation. So you had water heaters and pumps, so you were able to have instant heat, hot water to clean your parlor, and having water pumps so you didn't have to carry the water, whether it's into the home or into the barn.
Wow. There's a lot to think about there, because it's not, as you say, it's not only a safety issue moving away from, you know, kerosene lamps, which can cause untold amounts of problems in a variety of situations, to increase production when it comes to chickens. I'm curious where much of the push came from, if this was maybe a grassroots farmers really pushing on a national scale for federal support for this program, or if it was the other way around. Do we have a clear picture of where the clear push for rural electricity really came from?
Well, like in the early 20th century, when it came to electrifying, there was some skepticism. What if you electrocute your cows? Will it curdle the milk? Is this even safe? But once you get into the 1920s and 30s and you have a lot of appliances and equipment being developed that is being used in the urban communities, there was a lot of legislatures that saw this as bringing the agricultural industry into the 20th century and really making it needed. It became not necessarily a luxury, but it was a necessity to be able to be more productive, more efficient, and to be safer and to be more sanitary. When it came to refrigeration in the home, with you also then were able to develop you were able to keep food longer. You were able to have the whole concept of ice cream before refrigeration. You didn't have freezers, or electrification, you didn't have freezers. So you were able to have hot water, you were able to have flushing toilets. All these things really helped not only the health, but also the production of the whole community. And so it was really about how could they improve the 20th century. And if you could really see about how farming from the 20s all the way into the 60s, how it advanced so quickly with electricity, it was more of a necessity and not necessarily a luxury.
Absolutely. Now, looking at the, we've talked a little bit about the Rural Electrification Act and how it brought about funding to establish cooperatives to install those power lines. I'm curious, were those cooperatives member-owned back then? What was kind of the structure once that funding came into play?
So cooperatives, there are 28 distribution cooperatives that power 65,166 miles of electric lines across the state of South Dakota. And so the cooperatives are all member-based, so they all co-own, and then their dividends then go back into the cooperative and to their members instead of going to a corporation or shareholders of a corporation. And so it is member based, and so the more members you have, the more investors you have in that cooperative, and so it was cheaper to get electricity. And so it was a loan through the Rural Electrification Act, so you'd have to pay back that loan, that capital. And so that's why the areas that had the least populated, more vast distances were one of the last areas in which to be electrified, just because they needed a certain baseline of investors to bring electricity to your farm. Mm-hmm. There was that cost. One thing most people don't realize is how cooperatives in the early days, they really were about utilizing as much electricity as possible. So they'd, in their newsletter, they would publish articles about how much, who was the biggest user of electricity as a way of excitement of like, look, this farm uses so much more electricity than this farm. And they would give you, if you put up electric lights on your house, then you got a discount on your bill, or you got free one, you could rent out a washing machine. And where today it's the opposite. Cooperatives are really big about diversifying where they get their electricity, and also about conservation of energy. Hmm. And so most people don't realize that in South Dakota, the net electrical generation is from renewable resources, 46 from hydroelectric and 24 from wind. And so we have a very diverse renewable source of electricity here in South Dakota. And then one thing too is that when it came to when you ask about like what is the main push, we heard a lot from doing this research about how families, it was a lot of the wives that pushed for getting electricity, and not necessarily the husbands, because they wanted a washing machine and they wanted running water. So usually it was either a radio and a washing machine were the one of the first two things that were purchased, or it was an electric stove.
Wow. There you go. The women getting it done.
It's better than hauling water.
That is for sure. To me, this is a really interesting conversation, because I can't help but see certain parallels between this demand for rural electricity in the early 1900s and even today's push for rural broadband internet and some of the gaps that we're seeing in that availability right now. What can, in your opinion, what can knowing this history of bringing certain resources to especially rural areas help us understand about solving similar problems?
Well, and we actually discussed that when we were doing research for this, because there is a lot of parallels between broadband and electrification, where it might have been broadband or the internet was just maybe something that was a luxury, but now it really is essential to our day-to-day world. And the idea of like when if the lights go out, you realize how much you really have. And if you think about all the things that you plug in today, which you might not have had to plug in 20, 30 years ago, such as your telephone, my Fitbit I have to charge, versus a watch that you might have had to wind. Electricity is very much like how it is with the internet and where we get our information, how we communicate. And so it will be interesting to see when we get into this new decade, what will the 20s bring us here? Will it be the 20s like 100 years ago, where it was a push through providing that capital from the government to provide a way in which rural communities can get that that access? It'll be interesting to see how we move forward and what is essential to the rural communities.
Yeah. Before we let you go, the Power to the People exhibit, pretty recent. How long do people have to come and visit and learn more?
Yep, it will be open for 18 months, so you have a whole year. We also have some programming coming up where we have Howard Bonneman, who is a professor here in the dairy department, talking about the impact of dairy through electricity for the dairy industry, especially starting in not only production but also manufacturing. So we have from the barn to the ice cream parlor, and how did electricity really make a difference. And so it's a two-part lecture series, so check out our website at agmuseum.com, or we also have it on our Facebook page.
Sounds great. My guest has been Gwen McCausland with the South Dakota Ag Heritage Museum in Brookings, talking about the electrification of rural South Dakota. Gwen, thanks so much for joining us today. I learned a lot.
Thank you for having me.